supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. This is the time of year when a lot of people make errors with their compost. The fall leaf season is far behind, and people want to know, can they use grass clippings, shredded paper, old car batteries, something to try and make nutrition for their plants? We'll tell you exactly how to do it, and especially how not to do it, after lots of your fabulous phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Richard, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I am just ducky today. Rich, how are you, sir?
I am doing just ducky today, too, also.
And where is Richard Ducky?
Newark, Delaware. I have this humongous tomato plant already. I started about 6 weeks ago. It's Parks Whopper Improved Hybrid. I spaced them about 25 inches apart, and I have a pepper plant that's about 25 inches apart from my Parks Whopper.
Mm-hmm.
And my Parks Whopper is overgrowing my pepper plant. My pepper plant has started to sprout some peppers. Can I move it to another part of my garden already, or is it too late?
Yeah, first I have to tell you that Parks Whopper Improved is a really interesting tomato for me personally. It is a great tomato. We got an average of 3-pound tomatoes off of those plants. They are whopping big. Now,
Yeah. You've
got them on 2 feet apart. That's a little
Yeah. Close
together. The ideal thing, especially with a big indeterminate tomato like you're growing, is you have a 2-foot footprint into which the tomato is contained by a big cage. Then you have a foot of open space. Then you have the next plant. But overplanting is one of the most common rookie mistakes in the business.
Yeah, I didn't know it was going to get 6 feet tall in 6 weeks of planting. You know, I just showed up to the store, picked a couple out, and dang, it's 6 feet tall.
It could be 14 feet long by the end of the season. That would not be unusual for a big beefsteak indeterminate. Now, how are you caging it?
I started a cage about 4 weeks ago, and it's overgrown that cage already.
But what kind of a generally we tell
people. Tomato cage.
Yeah, but that's not going to work. What you need is welded wire animal fencing. You want to cut a 6-foot length. And then you want to turn it. Well, when you turn it into a cylinder, it'll be 2 feet wide across the top.
Yeah.
And then you want to center that around your tomato and stake the cage. Don't stake the tomato. And then your tomato plant, which has already outgrown its little spindly tomato cage, will fall into this big cage and it'll wrap around the sides and it'll stay contained, but it'll eat up its length by not going up straight.
Gotcha.
So it'll curl around the sides of the cage. It won't hit the top of the new cage until we get to, like, late August or early September.
Okay.
And then the answer to your question is yes. You can't move the tomato, but you can move the pepper plant.
Good.
So here's what you want to do. You want to make sure that the pepper plant is well watered.
Mm-hmm.
You want to dig the new hole before you take it out of the ground.
Okay.
When you take it out of the ground, you might want to have a couple of friends with you because you want to bring up a good honking island of dirt. Ideally, you won't expose the roots of the pepper plant.
Okay.
And you want to do this at the very end of the day, never first thing in the morning. And you're going to move the pepper plant over to its new spot. Again, ideally with its roots still in that soil. Drop it into the new hole, smooth everything out, and then take your garden hose, take off the nozzle, and just set it to drip, 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 like an annoying motel room faucet.
Yeah.
And let it drip at the base of the plant overnight and turn it off in the morning. That should allow the plant to get settled in, make sure it doesn't dehydrate. If you move it first thing in the morning, the hours of sun it has to endure after the transplant shock could kill it.
Okay.
But if you move it in the evening, it has the entire night to recover, get settled in its place, get over that shock. This is true even of new plantings. When you put your garden in the spring for the summer, you should do the planting as late in the day as you can. You'll avoid transplant shock that way.
Oh, well, that's something new because I planted them all in the mornings anyway, but now I know what to do.
That's what most people do. It's not intuitive, so it's something I can remind people of every year.
Well, that's good.
All right, man?
I appreciate it very much. I was wondering, so now I know.
All right. Well, good luck, Rich.
Thank you very much.
Take care, man.
Bye.
Ebony, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Ebony. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just getting a little frustrated with my strawberries. Currently, I'm outside of Philadelphia. I'm originally from Alaska, where I've been able to grow strawberries, you know, prolifically. And here, my problem is I put my plants in the ground in a raised bed 2 years ago with some really good topsoil. And I put in like six plants spaced out. And now the plants have sent out a lot of runners.
Right,
and
daughters.
Created a lot more plants.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not making any strawberries.
Where
what
were
you doing wrong?
Where were you in Alaska?
Homer, it's on the peninsula south of Anchorage.
All right. How much sun are the plants getting?
10 to 12 hours a day.
And you've never seen fruit?
I literally get like maybe one every 2 weeks, and it's tiny.
Okay. Well, that's not good.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you planted? Everbearing, Junebearing?
Everbearing.
Okay. So everbearing strawberries are smaller than the supermarket strawberries, but the advantage is theoretically they will continue to produce through the season as opposed to only producing a lot of very large strawberries literally in the month of June. So now time and variety is on your side because there's still time to change things. Now, you said you planted them in, quote, really good topsoil. What makes you think your topsoil was good?
Well, to start with, I got some leaf compost that was 2 years old, and I blended that with horse manure.
I knew it. Ding, 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 ding.
Okay.
Horse manure and poultry manures are very high in nitrogen. They are the ultimate fertilizer for non-flowering plants like sweet corn, lawns.
I was going to say my corn is so happy.
Yes, because it's all nitrogen, and the only thing corn wants is nitrogen, water, and sunshine.
Right.
But not only does a lot of nitrogen grow big plants, it inhibits the flowering of plants like berries.
Oh, my gosh.
Tomatoes and peppers.
In Alaska, I usually use like a fish compost that some of the fishermen would make where they would like, you know, layer fish and dirt and hay and worms, and then you go buy it by the bucket load.
Right.
Strawberries loved that.
Right. That might have been more balanced. So what you want to go out and do now is you want to find a natural fertilizer with a pretty big middle number. On the label of any fertilizer, there will be three numbers. The first number represents the relative amount of nitrogen, the middle number is phosphorus, and the third number is potassium. You want something like a 282 if you can find it. You don't want double digits. That would be a chemical fertilizer. And you also want, at this point in the season, you want to get a liquid fertilizer because it's going...
Well, is there anything that puts out phosphorus?
Phosphorus in its natural form is a mineral. You can also add rock phosphate dust to your soil, but it's going to take until next season to become bioavailable.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, if you want strawberries this season, and it's still a reasonable time to do this, you need a liquid fertilizer because it's going to activate months earlier. Now, at the end of the season, if you want to buy a little bag of rock phosphate and put that on top of the soil, that will be activated by the spring. Cover it with a little more soil or compost, but from now on, the horse manure is limited to non-flowering plants.
Got it.
And for the other plants, you just want basic yard waste compost or a nice balanced organic fertilizer. Okay?
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, good luck to you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will talk about summertime growing and harvesting at 6 p.m. on Thursday, July 12th at Meadowbrook Farm in Abington Township, just outside of Philadelphia. And I'll deliver lunchtime lectures at the famed Chautauqua Institute in upstate New York on Monday, July 30th and Tuesday, July 31st. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with grass clipping, shredded paper, and your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And Smart Pots, makers of the Smart Pot and the Big Bag Bed, fabric containers for your performance container garden. Learn more about the features and benefits of the Smart Pot at smartpots.com. That's smartpots.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a British gardening magazine appears to endorse the idea of piling wet grass clippings on top of shredded paper to make, quote, a quick compost. Is this a good idea? Well, you know what we think, and we'll tell you more about what we think and how to do it correctly when we get to the question of the week after lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Bruce, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you, Mike?
I'm good, Bruce. How are you?
Excellent, sir.
And where is Bruce excellent?
Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
All right. And the reason I yelled Bruce is I got tickets to see him on Broadway in October.
Awesome.
Yeah, baby doll. All right, what can we do for this, Bruce, in Cherry Hill?
I tried to follow your instructions for making homemade leaf compost, putting it in the black plastic bags and everything. And,
No, that's not my advice. No.
I thought it was you that said to shred up your leaves in the fall.
Right.
Put them in the black plastic bag.
That was only if you have a lot of outdoor composting bins that you're going to be mixing food waste into, so that then you got shredded leaves to mix in. To make regular leaf compost at home, you just shred up all your leaves and pile them up outside.
Uh-huh.
Putting them in plastic bags would be to save them for mulch the following season or to mix in with vegetable waste over the winter. But go ahead.
Okay, well, anyway, I got myself some nice ant colonies I created in each bag of the leaves.
Okay.
And other than dropping a boric acid
you don't have to do anything like that. Now, is there anything in there besides shredded leaves?
No, sir.
Okay. And what's your goal here of using these leaves?
I was just putting them in my vegetable garden.
Okay.
Just as a mulch or in the flower garden.
That's fine.
I didn't want to put colonies of ants right up next to my house.
Oh, no, that's fine, man. Ants are beneficial outdoors. They may come inside during dry times like we're having now. There's some ant invasions, but they don't care whether you put them there or whether they travel for miles. That's really not an issue. At any rate, we're not going to do that. How many bags of leaves do you still have?
Good half dozen.
Okay. So pick the sunniest spot that you have where you're not going to kill the grass or anything like that, and empty all the leaves out just into the open in this really sunny spot. And then once a day, go out with a regular rake and just move the leaves around a little bit. Within 3 or 4 days, the ants will have taken all their larvae and run away.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a piece of cake. Ants are like this. They will get into a bag like that because it's dark and moist, and then they set up their colony. But once they're disturbed, because this happens to me sometimes in the plant pots I leave outside on my potting bench over winter, pull two equal size pots out from each other, and there'll be a huge swarm of ants coming out, and I can see all their larvae there. And all I do is move it over into the sun, and a day later, there's not an ant out there. And I will say that shredded leaves make an excellent mulch for all of your garden beds. And the ants are not going to follow the leaves, so to speak. Once you expose them to the sun, raking the leaves around a little bit, they'll make a burrow, they'll take all their living larvae down with them, and they're not going to go back to the leaves again.
Okay.
So there's no reason to harm them. In the garden and in the outside world, they aerate the soil. They keep termites away from your house. Termites are frightened to death of ant colonies. And they they do a lot of good, and they do no harm in the garden. So there's no reason to attack them directly.
Sounds like a plan, sir.
All right. Good luck to you.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye. Linda, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. It's good to talk to you.
It's good to be talked to. Linda, how are you?
I'm good. I do have a garden question.
I have a question for you first.
What's that?
Where are you?
In Hampton, Virginia.
Oh, okay. Hampton, down by the Virginia Beach area?
Right.
I am an old Sandbridge rat. I'm an old Pungo rat.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, I love the area. My family.
Feels forever down in Pungo.
Yep. And my family still talks about how when we're going to Sandbridge, we take the turn at the Little Nemo Church. You know. So what can we do for Linda in the Tidewater area?
Well, I got to tell you, I love squash. I love all kinds of squash. Deep fry it, fry it, roast it, grill it, bake it in a cake. I love it. However, I've got a squash borer problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they also seem to love it.
Yes.
And I've done the research, and it looks like it just has this crazy life cycle, and there doesn't seem to be much of a way other than, you know, almost a hunt to go out with, you know, toothpicks and flashlights and so on at night, which I wasn't down with that. I don't want to do that. So what else can we do?
The squash vine borer is a day-flying moth.
Daytime moth.
It's a day flying moth. If you're out in the garden at the right time, you may be able to see it. It's pretty distinctive. You obviously can find lots of pictures online.
Yeah.
And the moth lays its eggs where the squash plant vine enters the soil. Then the moth flies away and dies. The eggs hatch, and out come these tiny, almost invisible caterpillars. And they immediately eat a tiny little hole into the vine of hollow-vined squash. So some of the winter squashes and pumpkins, they have solid vines with material inside. But all of your summer squash and a lot of other squashes have hollow vines. So it's very easy for these little caterpillars to get inside real quick. And then they're hidden. And then they feed on the inside of the vine undetected, and the first thing you see is a plant that looks like it needs water. And when you know, if you go and touch it, it'll come right out of the ground because they've severed the plant completely.
Right.
So the best way to deal with them is when you're planting your squash early in the season is to wrap gauze, not medical tape, but gauze, like you would wrap around your arm and then secure with medical tape.
Yeah.
Wrap the vine, because the vine doesn't photosynthesize, only leaves do. And make sure there's a good physical barrier at the soil line. Old-time farmers would do this with aluminum foil. They would wrap a little bit of aluminum foil around the base of the vine. Obviously, that's going to frustrate the little teeth of the baby caterpillars.
Right.
I know it seems too simple, but it's almost 100% effective.
That has to be done at the very beginning.
Well, it depends.
Right now,
is there any damage to your vines yet?
My neighbor has lost quite a few of them. He's lost two or three. I have one plant that is looking kind of yellow and wilty.
Right. Okay.
But the others still look pretty okay.
Okay, so the one that's yellow and wilting, go out with a razor blade, find the hole in the vine, slice it up until you get to what is a really greasy, nasty-looking caterpillar. And then you're outside in your own garden with a razor blade in your hand and a creature who just denied you a lot of squash. Whatever you do at that moment in time is between you and your God. But then the easy advice right now is to pile soil or compost up around the base of your vines. I'm always telling people not to volcano mulch their trees. But right now, volcano mulching could save your vines. Even if you catch the squash borer early in the game and you kill the caterpillar, many members of the squash family can grow auxiliary roots in parts that are covered by soil, like tomato plants. So there's nothing to lose by heaping soil up around.
So it's not an all is lost situation.
No, not at all. If you examine your vines carefully and there's no holes in them, you can also go out and get the old original form of BT, which would be sold by garden centers as Dipel. Spray that on the vines once a week, spraying heavily around where the vine meets the soil, and any caterpillars that then attempt to chew on that vine would immediately die. And it's non-toxic to you, birds, bees, butterflies, all those other things.
Okay. Is it a chemical, though?
No. It is the original organic, very specific pesticide that comes from a soil-borne organism. It was discovered in the 1920s. So many people think it's a chemical control, but it's really the first organic directed insecticide. It only affects caterpillars that chew on the sprayed leaves. It can't even hurt a butterfly because they're not caterpillars anymore.
Wow. And how do you spell it? D-I-P-E-L?
D-I-P-E-L is the most common brand name. It's like saying Tylenol. People might not know if you say acetaminophen, but if you say Tylenol, they know what you mean. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just ask for Dipel. It may have a different brand name. Just look for the letters BT as the active ingredient. All right? Tom, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Tom. How are you, man?
I'm good.
And where is Tom good?
I live in Springfield Township, Montgomery County, PA.
Okay, just outside of Philadelphia.
Yep.
All right, what can we do for Tom in Springfield Township?
Well, so my issue is, I just finished building raised beds. Me and my wife found kind of a really nice spot in the backyard, get lots of sun. And we built 2 4x12 raised beds. I used fieldstone for it. I dug up the soil to about 2 feet, mixed some peat moss into that.
Why?
And then topped it off with another foot of soil. I'm sorry?
Why? Why did you mix peat moss in?
I mixed the peat moss in because the soil seemed very clay-like.
Yeah.
And then I asked the local garden center, and they told me that peat moss was the best thing.
Because they happen to have 8,000 giant bricks of it sitting outside.
I'm not sure. Sounds like it.
Yeah, you have to be careful with using peat moss. I know if you read the packaging, it says it's a soil amendment, it's a breakfast food, it's a car deodorizer. What it is a highly acidic, very lightweight kind of soil that comes from peat bogs up in Canada. It is highly acidic. It is a fabulous mulch and planting medium for blueberries, rhododendrons, azaleas, all of the plants that like an acid soil. You can use it to change the color of hydrangeas. You can do all sorts of garden tricks. But if you want to use it as a soil amendment, you have to add a significant amount of either hardwood ash from a fireplace or wood stove or agricultural lime to balance out the pH. Because in Pennsylvania, most soils are already tending towards acidic. So you don't want to push them to a lower number. And so you need to neutralize the peat moss, which inconveniently, of course, they don't say anything about on the packaging.
Okay. I actually had a bigger question, which was that I had put these two raised beds in. I put the topsoil on top of it, which also has mushroom compost in it. I wanted to put leaf compost on top of the whole thing, but I haven't gotten around to that yet. But after I had finished, I realized that I had placed the two garden beds directly either on the very edge or maybe slightly on top of our leach field, because I'm in a section that doesn't have public sewer and I have a septic system in my house.
Right.
So I'm wondering if that's an issue for growing a vegetable garden.
Well,
right there.
What tipped you off? The 50-foot tall lettuce plants on the edge closest to the field, you know?
Well, what tipped me off is the fact that when we bought the house, it had a failing septic system and we had to replace it a couple of years ago.
Okay.
So,
So, but you went brain dead during construction.
I did.
Yeah. Okay, good. Just checking. Well, you know, you didn't hit any pipes.
I didn't. I dug about 2 feet deep and I didn't hit any pipes, but I had read that they could be down as low as 3 feet.
The important thing is that you don't damage the pipes. People misconstrue why you're supposed to stay away from septic fields. It's not so much because you're going to get E. coli from your Brussels sprouts. It's because if you damage those pipes enough and you clog them up with soil or you break them, stuff comes back into your house that you had said goodbye to, and which you hoped would be a permanent goodbye, but it comes back to say hello to you. So you want to make sure you don't damage the pipes. Now, had you built your beds right on top of the field, I would suggest that you have somebody come in with one of those spy scopes. They can send down the hole and make sure you didn't do any damage. But with everything being on the outside and everything is functioning properly, right?
Yeah. I definitely didn't contact any pipes and everything is still working fine.
Exactly. So you don't want to mess with that. The interesting thing here is you're fine. There's no disease issues or anything like that. You do have grass over the field still.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So make sure that you're careful when you mow the grass. Don't use really heavy equipment or anything like that. If you should get your lawn aerated, don't have them aerate the field. And just be careful. Are you new to septic systems?
Yeah, this is the first place I've lived that actually doesn't have a regular sewer.
Okay. And did you have it pumped out yet?
No, not yet. It's only been maybe 2 years, and the first year we didn't even live in the house yet. So.
Oh, okay. I would probably arrange to have it pumped out this fall, and the person who comes to pump it out can tell you after that what kind of schedule you should be on. Like you should have called them a year ago, or you can go 3 years in between.
Okay.
This is advice from a city mouse who moved out to be a country mouse 35 years ago and not only didn't know what a septic tank was, didn't know where mine was. All right, but you're cool. Just be careful around the pipes. Don't plant any big trees in there or anything.
All right, great.
All right, good luck, Tom.
Yep, thanks so much.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will talk about summertime growing and harvesting at 6 p.m. on Thursday, July 12th at Meadowbrook Farm in Abington Township, just outside of Philadelphia. I'll also speak at the American Birding Expo in Oaks, PA on Saturday, September 22nd, and in beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina on Tuesday, October 23rd. But don't go checking the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with grass clipping, shredded paper, and your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Smart Pots, makers of the Smart Pot and the Big Bag Bed, fabric containers for your performance container garden. Learn more about the features and benefits of the Smart Pot at smartpots.com. That's smartpots.com. And the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. This is the time of year when people realize they should be making compost, but they didn't save any fall leaves. So they look to things like junk mail and grass clippings to take the easy way out. Well, there is no easy way out because you're going to make junk compost if it's junk going in. We'll tell you how to make good compost and what not to never do, never time, anytime, after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Laurie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Laurie. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I am just ducky. Thanks for asking. Where is Laurie pretty good?
I am in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. Home of the Triple A Phillies team, the Iron Piggy.
That's very true. We are home of the Iron Pigs, and it's Iron Pig season up here.
That's right. Lots of bacon. I know.
Right.
I can't believe you go to a minor league game and they give you a hat with a piece of bacon on it.
Well, you know, we are living here in Allentown, as the song used to say.
That's right. What can we do for Laurie in Allentown?
I am struggling with getting my hydrangeas to bloom the year after I plant them. I buy them in the nursery because they look beautiful.
Yeah.
And I plant them properly. And I know not to. I know that chances are they bloom on old wood. And so I don't trim anything. But they do not bloom in consecutive years.
Okay. Now, let's drop back, say, 3 years ago. We had 2 years in a row, and I've kind of lost track of which it was, with the Halloween storms. And
oh, yeah, right.
We had 2 years in a row where nobody's hydrangeas bloomed, essentially, where there was an early frost or there was a mm-hmm. late killing frost, and the plants lived to produce green leaves, but they didn't have the stamina or the time to produce flowers. Now, my hydrangeas were among those, so I was able to assure people, no, nobody got any, because my hydrangeas had bloomed reliably for 15 years. And I always tell people that generally when their hydrangeas don't bloom, it's because they pruned them. So
right. The
pruning I came up with, which is a technique that works great, is you just leave them alone until, you know, mid-spring, and that's when the flower buds start forming. And then you leave them alone some more until the flowers are a decent size and you can see where all the buds are. And then you can prune away old wood and dead wood and branches that are in front of the flowers. And that way you can never make a mistake. But I have to tell you, I live in the Lehigh Valley as well. And I have the most magnificent flower set on my hydrangeas I've ever had.
Yeah, you know, my first assumption was that there was no old wood, that they were just dying back, you know.
No. Don't get obsessed with the old wood, new wood line.
I don't
early
trim them
on.
At all.
Okay.
I don't take a pruner to them.
Okay.
And the one is 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. And it's never flowered?
It flowered for the first year or two. Now, I have a lace cap, a small lace cap in the front. That has never flowered after the year after I bought it. This year, I just bought a Twist and Shout.
Okay.
And that's kind of why I'm calling, because it's so beautiful. I don't want to do anything wrong.
Okay.
To
You're an incredibly patient woman, Laurie.
I am.
So are these plants mulched?
I haven't been mulching the last couple of years because I thought we weren't supposed to.
That's correct. Are they fed?
No. Mm-mm.
Are they growing in or near a treated lawn?
No. Mm-mm. We don't treat back there because we have dogs.
How much sun do they get?
Everything else. It's a big perennial garden. Everything else in the garden blooms.
And you say you don't prune them?
Nope.
Ever?
Not at all. Well, one of them, both of them are kind of dwarf varieties. So there's no, you know, I wouldn't prune them. They're lovely green mm-hmm.
right.
shrubs, but no.
Everything you've described makes sense. Do you feed the other plants? What is different?
I don't feed the other plants at all.
Hmm.
I do not. I didn't think you were supposed to feed perennials.
No. And
so,
you're correct, especially if they're blooming well.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm right next to, I have a Baptisia. I have some yellow, not flag iris, some real pretty yellow iris next to them, of all kinds of things in
mm-hmm.
there that bloom.
Okay. Two things I can suggest. The first thing is I want you to go to an independent garden center and get a little mm-hmm. bag of rock phosphate.
Okay.
That's a mined mineral. And
Right. You're
going to put like a cup of it around the root zone of each plant and then cover that with compost.
Okay.
The other is to find the neighbor on one side of you who's giving you the evil eye while she's holding a picture of a hydrangea in her other hand. And take her a chicken or something and beg forgiveness.
So you don't think I should be, like, covering them in the winter with, like, mulch?
No. There is virtually no explanation.
So maybe I just keep trying.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I wanted to make sure I wasn't doing anything, but it doesn't sound like I am, so.
No, try the rock phosphate trick. That often works for people. And, you know, keep an eye out on your neighbors.
All righty. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Good luck, Lori.
Thanks. Bye.
James, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks for having me on, Mike.
Well, thanks for being had, James. Where are you, man?
I'm in Havertown, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, I have a question. A few years ago, I went to the Morris Arboretum workshop on pruning, or not pruning, but rather grafting fruit trees. And I have a couple of apple trees that I successfully got to survive. And now they're growing into beautiful little trees, but I noticed that they seem to have very little growth from the actual spot where I grafted the top varieties onto the base roots. What I mean by that is that the rootstock they gave us is a disease-resistant variety of roots. And the top part of the plant, I chose to kind of antiquarian varieties or antique varieties of apples. So I have a Spitzenberg, which was supposedly Jefferson's favorite,
right,
and a vine sap. And they're both very healthy plants, but I just noticed that where it's grafted, it's growing very slowly, and there's very little growth compared to the rest of the plant that I assume is growing from the root base.
Well, there shouldn't be any or a lot of growth from the root. How high up is the graft?
The graft is probably now a third of the way up the plant, I'm guessing.
Yeah, okay. That's unusual. Now, I'm totally a book learner and a Lee Reich listener when it comes to grafting plants. So you have a lot of lush growth below the graft and not a lot of lush growth above it.
It's kind of both, but you can distinguish two different sets of leaves clearly on each tree.
Okay. My instincts here, you know, rootstocks, as you kind of implied, are from a healthy, super healthy variety that has superhuman powers in one direction.
True.
But the fruit might not be great.
Correct.
So you take a graft of the fruit that you want to eat, and you plunk it down on top of this super strong root, and theoretically the rootstock will keep your plant healthy, and the top part will give you the fruit you want. I think because these rootstocks may be really aggressive and super healthy, I know, for instance, in some roses, it may still be done, but for many years, the most common rootstock was multiflora rose, the stuff that's out in the woods. And we know how aggressive they can get. I might, if I were you, the Morris Arboretum that you mentioned is a great place. We are so lucky in the Philadelphia area. We have like a dozen fabulous public gardens and arboretums. I mean, more than a
Indeed.
Summer's worth to enjoy. So you might want to confirm this with the people at Morris, but my instinct would be I don't see any point for the growth below the graft, and it could be sapping all the strength of the tree proper.
True. Okay.
So there's no reason for those branches to be down there. So Simon says, why not prune those branches off? Because you wouldn't want to eat the fruit on them.
True.
And try to direct the energy of the plant towards the top. Now, are the trees mulched? Are they fed?
Not really.
No, that's a yes or no. No, no, James. That's a yes or no answer. There's no.
No.
So they're not mulched and they're not fed.
No, not at all.
Okay, so I would prune off that bottom growth. You got nothing to lose there. You're also going to open up airflow at the bottom of the plants, which can't be bad. And I would mulch around the trees with an inch or two of good quality yard waste compost. And did they flower well this spring?
Not at all, no. They haven't flowered yet. I've had them for 3 years. They're not big trees yet. They're kind of cute at this point still.
Okay, well, this would be a good time to start directing that energy. I would prune off that bottom growth. I would feed them compost. And just for luck, I would call the people you took the class from or email them and say, look, you know, this bum on the radio said to prune off these bottom branches, which I think is a good idea for several reasons. So I could be wrong. So just just double check with them because it's not one of my specialties. But looking back on the trees that I've had over the years, I don't remember ever having a lot of growth below the graft.
Okay, well, good to know. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show.
Well, thank you. It's a great question. I'm glad you called in.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it is time for the question of the week, which we're calling Keep Your Credit Cards Out of the Compost. Brett Rader, production associate for Production Association of the Association of Producers, please get us started with this week's question.
Gladly, Mike. Judy in Columbus, New Jersey, about 10 miles south of Trenton, writes, I was just watching a Flora Best lawnmower video at the Facebook page for The English Garden magazine, and the host used grass clippings and shredded paper to make a quick compost. I know you always recommend mulching grass back into the lawn, but there have been times when my grass grew so fast and tall that I needed to bag it. I only have two small trees, so there are no dried leaves for me to rake up in the fall and use. Is it okay to add shredded copier paper and credit card advertisements to my compost pile? I compost a lot of green veggie waste and eggshells. Now this is why your TED Talk on the subject is called Everything You Know About Composting is Wrong.
Right. First, the video she refers to looks more like an infomercial than an article. No matter what, the guy in the video doesn't know how to cut a lawn, mulch, or make compost. He poo-poos using this overpriced mower in its mulching mode, and instead he gets really excited about collecting the clippings and using them unwisely. First, he tosses a huge amount of the fresh, wet, green clippings up against the trunk of a tiny, soon-to-be-dead tree and calls it mulching. Then he pours the rest of the clippings on top of what looks like shredded office copy paper and calls it a great way to make easy compost.
Okay, for starters, you're supposed to always mulch your clippings back into your lawn because those clips are 10% nitrogen, which is the perfect lawn food. Every time you mulch them back into the lawn, they give it a gentle feeding. Every time you take it away, you starve the lawn of its natural food. But what about her too tall,
Excuse, Brett. It's called an excuse. And excuses are what you make when you didn't do something right the first time. A dedicated mulching mower, that's one with a sealed deck and a super sharp blade, can take almost any height of grass and return it to the turf in the form of a pulverized powder because it keeps cutting and recutting the blades of grass.
And then there's the issue of herbicides. If the lawn he cut was treated, those persistent weed-killing chemicals would certainly have killed that little tree. And the compost he claimed he was making would have been deadly to non-grass plants as well.
Luckily, I don't think there was any kind of compost going to be made. That big pile of wet grass would have just gotten all slimy on top of the paper.
And, as you always warn people, there's no nutrition in paper, so even if you mixed it in enough to make compost, and even if the clippings weren't treated, the resulting material wouldn't have had much nutrition for plants, if any at all.
Right, there's nothing for plants in shredded paper, and most, if not all, of the nitrogen in the clippings would have just off-gassed into the air. And our listener asks about using junk mail credit card ads. So now we're talking about slick coated paper, cellophane envelope windows, and shredded plastic credit cards. Yuck!
And her veggie waste and eggshells aren't making good compost either. You need the majority of a pile or bin to contain dry brown materials like shredded leaves, or other browns like last year's corn or sunflower stalks.
Correct. If she truly has no access to leaves, she should get a worm bin and run her kitchen waste through that. Big piles of garbage outdoors are going to stay big piles of garbage outdoors and just attract flies and vermin.
But she almost certainly does have access to fall leaves in New Jersey.
Absolutely. She should ask her neighbors for a couple of bags apiece or rake them up at a public park or schoolyard or scavenge them from the curb when foolish people throw them away. Leaves are abundant in her area. And, you know, in areas where they're not abundant, people are really resourceful. Remember when I spoke in Colorado last month?
Yeah, why?
I stayed on a ranch run by an intrepid young gardener. Hello, Jessica, who had moved there recently from Oklahoma City. Well, she just went back to Oklahoma to visit friends and family and sent me a photo of her driving back to Colorado in a pickup truck and trailer, both filled with big plastic trash bags full of leaves.
Where did she find leaves at this time of year?
She scavenged the woods, man. All somebody in Jersey has to do is scavenge the neighborhood. Leave no leaf unturned. Well, that sure was a timely reminder about how to make compost correctly now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. Just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week, and you will always find the latest question of the week at the Gardens Alive website. Yikes, my producer is threatening to contaminate my compost if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location, please, please, please. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find the answers to all those garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our vice president of production is Terry Murray. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Our engineer is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and stay current with the show at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website cooking. Well-shredded Al Banks is our editor. Our associate producer of Production Association is Brett Rader. I'm your host, half-cooked Mike McGrath. I'd say something funny about compost here, but I'm busy keeping a close eye on my garlic patch because harvest time is almost here. And if it arrives soon, that'll explain the radioactive breath when I see you again next week.